David's heavy trial. This chapter is based on 1 Samuel 29:30, 2 Samuel 1. David and his men had not taken part in the battle between Saul and the Philistines, though they had marched with the Philistines to the field of conflict. As the two armies prepared to join battle, the son of Jesse found himself in great perplexity. Achish expected him to fight for the Philistines. Should he leave the post assigned him and withdraw from the field with ingratitude and treachery to Achish, who had protected him? Such an act would give him a bad name and expose him to the wrath of enemies who were more to be feared than Saul. Yet he could not for a moment agree to fight against Israel and become a traitor to his country, the enemy of God and of his people. It would forever bar his way to the throne of Israel. And if Saul was killed in the battle, many would charge David with his death. It would have been much better to find refuge in God's strong fortress of the mountains than with the sworn enemies of his people. But the Lord, in his great mercy, did not punish his servant by leaving him in his distress and perplexity. Although David had left the path of strict integrity when he had lost his grasp on divine power, it was still the purpose of his heart to be true to God. Angels of the Lord moved upon the Philistine princes to protest against having David and his force with the army in the approaching conflict. "What are these Hebrews doing here?" cried the Philistine lords, crowding around Achish. He replied, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me these days, or these years? And to this day I have found no fault in him since he defected to me." David sent back to Ziklag. But the princes angrily persisted, "Make this fellow return, that he may go back to the place which you have appointed for him, and do not let him go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become our adversary. For with what could he reconcile himself to his master, if not with the heads of these men? Is this not David, of whom they sang one to another in dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s?' They did not believe that David would fight against his own people. In the heat of battle, he could inflict greater harm on the Philistines than all of Saul's army. Achish, calling David, said, "Surely, as the Lord lives, you have been upright. For to this day I have not found evil in you since the day of your coming to me. Nevertheless, the lords do not favor you. Therefore, return now, and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines." Thus the trap entangling David was broken. After 3 days' travel, David and his band of 600 men reached Ziklag, their Philistine home. But a scene of desolation met their view. The Amalekites had taken revenge for themselves for David's invasions into their territory and had surprised the city while it was unguarded. They stripped and burned it and departed, taking all the women and children as captives and many stolen items. In horror and amazement, David and his men stared silently at the smoldering ruins. Then, as a sense of their terrible loss burst upon them, those battle-scarred warriors lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. Here again, David was reaping the sad results of his lack of faith that led him to place himself among the enemies of God and his people. David's followers turned on him as the cause of their calamities. He had angered the Amalekites by his attack against them, yet, too confident of security in the midst of his enemies, he had left the city unguarded. Maddened with grief and rage, his soldiers threatened to stone their leader. David's great temptation to discouragement. All that David held dear on earth had been swept away from him. Saul had driven him from his country, the Amalekites had plundered his city, his wives and children had been made prisoners, and his friends had threatened him with death. In this time of utmost desperation, David looked earnestly to God for help. He strengthened himself in the Lord, recalling many evidences of God's favor. Whenever I am afraid, I will trust in you. Psalm 56, verse 3, was the language of his heart. Though he could not see a way out of the difficulty, God would teach him what to do. Sending for Abiathar the priest, David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them?" The answer was, "Pursue, for you shall surely overtake them, and without fail recover all." David and his soldiers set out at once to catch their fleeing foe. Their march was so rapid that 200 of their number were too exhausted to continue and had to stop and rest. But David pressed forward with the remaining 400. Advancing, they found an Egyptian slave, apparently about to die of weariness and hunger. When he received food and drink, he revived. He had been left to die by the invading force. After David promised that he would not be killed or delivered to his master, he agreed to lead the men to the camp of their enemies. As they came near the encampment, they saw a scene of drunkenness and merrymaking. The victorious army were spread out over all the land, eating and drinking and dancing, because of all the great spoil which they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. David ordered an immediate attack. The Amalekites were surprised and thrown into confusion. The battle continued until nearly all the enemy were killed. David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives. And nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything which they had taken from them. David recovered all. If it had not been for the restraining power of God, the Amalekites would have killed the people of Ziklag. They decided to spare the captives, thinking to heighten the triumph by leading home a large number of prisoners to sell as slaves. Thus, unknowingly, they fulfilled God's purpose, keeping the prisoners to be restored to their husbands and fathers. God is ever at work to counteract evil. With great rejoicing, the victorious fighters began their homeward march. The more selfish and undisciplined of the 400 men urged that those who had had no part in the battle should not share the rewards. But David did not agree and would not permit such an arrangement. "My brethren, you shall not do so," he said, "with what the Lord has given us. As his part is that goes down to the battle, so shall his part be that stays by the supplies. They shall share alike." David and his men had captured extensive flocks and herds belonging to the Amalekites. These were called David's spoil, and upon returning to Ziklag, he sent presents from this spoil to the elders of his own tribe of Judah. Everyone who had helped and supported him and his followers in the mountain refuges when he had been forced to flee for his life were remembered. As David and his warriors worked to restore their ruined homes, they watched for news of the battle fought between Israel and the Philistines. Suddenly, a messenger entered the town, with his clothes torn and dust on his head. He was at once brought to David, and he bowed before him as if David were a powerful prince whose favor he desired. The messenger reported Saul's defeat and death, and the death of Jonathan. But he went beyond a simple statement of facts. He hoped to obtain honor for himself as the one who had killed the king. With an air of boasting, the man said that he found the monarch of Israel wounded, and that at his own request, the messenger had killed him. Then he gave David the crown from Saul's head and the golden bracelets from his arms. He confidently expected a rich reward for the part he had acted. David grieved for Saul. But David took hold of his own clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. After the first shock of the terrible news wore off, David's thoughts returned to the stranger who had brought the news and the crime of which, according to his own statement, he was guilty. "Where are you from?" And he answered, "I am the son of an alien, an Amalekite." So David said to him, "How was it you were not afraid to put forth your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" Twice, David had refused to lift his hand against him who had been consecrated by the command of God to rule over Israel. Yet the Amalekite had accused himself of a crime worthy of death. David said, "Your blood is on your own head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have killed the Lord's anointed.'" David's grief at the death of Saul was sincere and deep, revealing the generosity of a noble nature. He did not rejoice in the fall of his enemy. The barrier that had kept him from taking the throne of Israel was removed, but this did not bring him joy. Now he thought of nothing in Saul's history except that he was noble and kingly. The name of Saul was linked with that of Jonathan, whose friendship had been so true and unselfish. The song in which David expressed the feelings of his heart became a treasure to his nation and to the people of God in all future ages. See 2 Samuel 1, verse 19 to 27.